Welcome, friends. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Today is the 27th of October, 2015, and today we are talking to Phil Giraldi, who people might be familiar with as a previous guest on the Corbett Report back in September of 2013, where we were talking about the Turkish and Israeli lobbies in the U.S. and their connections to black market operations, including drug running, terrorism, and other assorted nefarious activities. And today, I suppose, is a somewhat of a continuation of that interview. So I'll put that previous interview in the show notes for this one at CorbettReport.com. But today we're going to be talking about Phil Giraldi's latest article for The American Conservative at TheAmericanConservative.com. Did foreign governments blackmail Denny Hastert? A very good question to be asking right now. Let's bring him on. Phil Giraldi, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, thank you for having me on.
Well, let's talk about this article, and I think the general context of this article will not need a lot of elaboration to my listeners who've been following the reporting I've been doing in the last couple of weeks on this Denny Hastert scandal and the real depth of the scandal and what's not being said about it. But just in your own words, perhaps you can summarize for us the implications and the allegations that that are being raised in this article.
Well, basically, I was looking at the issue of what where the Hastert case was moving. This was, you know, written about 2 weeks ago, and at that point, it was reported in the media that Hastert would be cutting some kind of plea bargain on the charges that had been directed against him, and essentially that this plea bargain would seal all previous FBI investigations and all the information that had been collected on the case relating to him. And this, of course, raised some interesting questions. Sybil Edmonds, for example, led the charge because she is probably more than anyone on earth familiar with the Hastert case, having seen the investigative material. And she said, well, this guy was involved with all kinds of schemes, including the bizarre sexual improprieties. And the FBI has all this information, and essentially this is going to go away. The really interesting aspect, of course, is that a lot of these things occurred in a context of foreign lobbying groups, and she specifically pointed out the Israelis and the Turks. And so we have foreign lobbying groups connected to their intelligence services who apparently were knowledgeable about all this stuff going on.
Well, just to bring everyone up to speed, yes, Dennis Hastert is going to plead guilty, I believe, on Wednesday. It is his scheduled court appearance, and according to the press, there is a plea deal in place, so that, as the Chicago Sun-Times is reporting, with plea deal, details of Hastert allegations may be lost to history. So this is a pretty interesting case, I mean, from a lot of different perspectives, but one is that, as this article goes on to note, this is he is now among the top, the highest ranking ever Illinois politicians to go down in infamy in a scandal of this sort. But perhaps more importantly than that, as you highlight here, are the real not only allegations, but the obvious, I think, worries that you would have of someone who was so high up in the U.S. Political system at one point, just a couple of people away from the presidency, to be implicated in a scandal of this sort when there are allegations of foreign lobby involvement. Let's spell out the implications of this for people who might not understand just how important it is to think about the blackmailable aspects of a case like this when it comes to a high-ranking politician like Hastert.
Yeah, well, that's precisely the problem. The fact is that we don't know, the public doesn't know what the government knows about what Hastert did. And this is kind of scary in what we tend to regard, at least some of the time, as a democracy. Here you have foreign intelligence services. First of all, I mean, there are a couple of issues that, you know, I don't want to take up too much time with it, but obviously there were also allegations from Sybil that he was receiving illegal political contributions from these organizations. So there are a couple of elements that come into this, and they were also implementers in a way of his sexual activities. So all this stuff is going to be covered up. It's going to go away. And your original question was, of course, why is the media so quiet about this? My answer to that would be because corruption is so pervasive in the U.S. Congress, so pervasive in our government in general, that the media, which is part of corporate America, doesn't want to touch this story. They don't want to get into, you know, what these politicians get into and what they do. Hastert, for example, made millions of dollars that he was paying in bribes to this, in blackmail to this guy. He made it while he was working in a lobbying firm headed by Dick Gephardt, a leading Democrat. And so it goes on both sides of the political aisle. And this corruption story is something that is so enormous that basically the media is afraid of it because of its own self-interest.
Well, are there precedents that we can look to as something instructive in terms of how a story like this can actually gain legs in the press? I mean, can we look at something like a Foley scandal or Larry Craig or some of these scandals that have unfolded in the past that have actually garnered media attention as perhaps some sign that there may be something different in this case? Or is there some strategy that can be employed for getting information out through those media channels?
Well, I think Hastert was so high up, and Hastert was involved with so many others, that there's a different dimension to him. But I would also mention the fact that a lot of the earlier scandals that you and I recall in terms of revelations of what politicians were up to and everything like that were in an era when there wasn't independent media more than there is now. And I blame a lot of the stuff that is going wrong in the country right now on the fact that we lack an independent fourth estate. We lack a fourth estate that's willing to take on these stories in a serious way. And I think Hastert benefits from this. And you know, there's another aspect to this, which I mentioned in my article, is that Hastert, you know, in his defense, could easily have subpoenaed the government to produce the files on him. And he knew, or his defense would know, that producing the files on him would implicate a whole lot of other politicians. So the government is not willing to do that. So that's a kind of a special aspect of the Hastert case.
So I guess the lesson here for would-be politicians is just collect enough dirt on your would-be blackmailers so that you can blackmail them back.
Yeah, that's exactly the lesson, that the government basically is overly sensitive to the niceties of its club, you know, of fellow politicians, and is not going to embarrass itself unnecessarily. So this, as I say, is both sides of the aisle, is Democrats, Republicans, they're both the same in this game. And it's unfortunate, but that's the kind of mess we've gotten into, where the political class essentially insulates itself from serving the people. It doesn't do that anymore.
What would you say to critics of this story and the way that you're reporting it, who would say that, well, this is just a one-source story. All we have is Sybil Edmonds' word on it. Is that all we have on this scandal?
No. In a sense, it is. But the fact is that the United States government, John Ashcroft, put a gag order on Sybil Edmonds twice, indicating that as far as the Justice Department was concerned, she was revealing true secret U.S. government information. So that's a verifier in and of itself. And I also note in my article that nobody has ever really challenged effectively the stuff that she's revealed in that was related to the documents that she actually saw and handled when she was working for the FBI. I haven't seen anyone debunk that. So given that, I'd have to find her very credible.
Well, on the Hastert case in particular, I'll also direct people's attention to a 2005 Vanity Fair article by David Rose that not only used Sybil Edmonds, but other FBI and State Department sources, right, Court documents, and other things to back up the Hastert allegations in particular. So this story has been out there for over a decade now, and is now, I guess, has received a tiny bit of traction because this scandal has broken regarding his alleged improprieties back in, you know, 1969 or whenever this allegedly took place. But obviously this information is much more much more to the point of what's really taking place at some of the highest levels of office in the United States. And that, I think, speaks volumes. And as you say, I think the media, the lack of media coverage of this should be speaking volumes to people out there. Your article now has been out at the American Conservative for 1 week now. What kind of response have you had to your rhetorical question? Did foreign governments blackmail Denny Hastert?
Well, we had a pretty good response, but you know, when you have articles on websites, the people who make comments tend to talk back and forth to each other. And I think everybody, the comments that I saw, everyone was basically accepting the premise that we have an extremely corrupt government and that this is just another cover-up. And I don't think, but see what other conclusion you can come to. It's this guy's going to get a slap on the wrist. He's going to pay a fine, which he can easily afford. And life goes on, and yet this is a guy who ruined the lives of some young men, and this is a guy who was corrupt when he was in office, and this is a guy who might have been doing favors for foreign governments when he was in office, and yet that's all going to disappear.
You realize that the tendency then for the public in the face of a story like this is to just throw up their hands in the air and say, well, what are you going to do? And life will go on. Is there anything that we can take out of this story other than the, horrible people in positions of power will never be held accountable for that?
Yeah, well, I think that's what you do take out of this. But I think the public, the more that you and I and people like us can make the public aware that this is going on, there might just someday be a tipping point where people demand accountability from their elected officials. I wrote another article for another site that I write for, Ron Unz's site, saying that the most feared word in Washington is the A word. It's accountability. Nobody has been held accountable for anything since 9/11. If you look at the record in terms of all the horrible things that have happened in terms of our civil liberties, in terms of corruption in Congress and everything else, nobody has ever held accountable.
Well, you cover stories not quite always this salacious, but certainly this important in the work that you do for the Council for the National Interest. Tell people about that work and where they can find it.
Well, Council for the National Interest has been around for about 20 years. It was founded by former ambassadors and congressmen, and the idea was that a lot of our foreign policy, again, this goes back to the Hastert case, a lot of our foreign policy is skewed by special interests. And one of the biggest special interests, of course, is the Israel lobby, which distorts foreign policy in a major part of the world. And has, if anything, grown stronger in the past decade, where presidents are really unwilling to challenge it in any serious way. So we do our best to kind of get the story out, and we try to focus on, you know, what is the U.S. interest? The U.S. interest is not to be in bed with any foreign country. Our U.S. interest is to do what is good for the American people, and one might add, do good for the international community. And it's not really a question of being partisan for somebody who is essentially pursuing their own interests. So we try to make that shift a priority, and to have people start thinking that there are other ways to deal with the problems in the Middle East.
All right. Well, I will link to the CNI website in the show notes for this interview, as well as the article that we're discussing, the previous interview here on the Corbett Report with yourself, and some of the other pieces that we mentioned. I should have mentioned this at the beginning. I'll also link to the Boiling Frogs Post compendium of information about the Hastert scandals for anyone who is joining this in medias res and has no idea what we're talking about. But a lot to take away from this. Are there any other resources you'd like to direct people to?
Well, I think there are a number of good websites that people can go to. The American Conservative, which I write for, antiwar.com, uns.com. These are a lot of good sites that have interesting material that I think your readers would find make compelling cases about a lot of the things that are just going wrong in our country.
All right. Well, Phil Giraldi, I think we'll leave it there for today. I very much appreciate your time and your effort in getting the word out about this Hastert scandal in whatever way we can. I think each bit of this is important, so thank you for your work.
Okay. Well, thank you for having me on.